Time for our joke du jour, folks. If you have a joke you want to send to us, you can send it by email, peter@peteranthonyholder.com. That's peter@peteranthonyholder.com. You can find us on the CJD website at cjd.com. And here is tonight's joke du jour. I warn you, it's a groaner. Here's our joke du jour. Mahatma Gandhi, as you know, walked barefoot most of the time, which produced an impressive set of calluses on his feet. He also ate very little, which made him rather frail, and with his odd diet, he suffered from bad breath. Do you know what this made him? Are you ready for it? A super calloused, fragic mystic plagued with halitosis. I warned you. You can send it in to peteranthonyholder.com. That's peteranthonyholder.com. I just realized I did a bad pun with song lyrics. I don't know if our next guest will want to talk to me after that now. We'll be speaking with Jerry Herman here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
In Montreal, you're with the News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
We have a very special guest on the line with us right now, Jerry Herman, well-renowned Broadway lyricist and Tony winner. He's on the line with us from California, ironically. Hi, Jerry, how are you?
Hi, I'm just fine. I wanted to tell you that I loved your joke because I didn't write the song.
Oh. Well, it's nice to have you on the program with us. You are in California right now, right?
Yes, I'm in Beverly Hills.
Okay, and I have to ask right off the bat because you're so, people know you so well from Broadway. I'm sure you have a lot of friends back there, and you must have concerns about the people you know in New York area.
Oh, yes, I've been in contact with all of them through these weeks, and they're hanging in. You know, the New Yorkers are strong, and they're going to get through this.
Okay. 7900991 star talk, 1-800-491-CJD for the Laurentians, Eastern Townships, Ottawa, Hull area, and also the border states. Those are the numbers to call if you'd like to speak to Jerry Herman, who first burst into Broadway, a while back with, what was it, Milk and Honey?
Milk and Honey was my first Broadway show, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Was it always your intent, your goal, to work toward the Broadway stage? Because at the time that you came along, they were still doing movie musicals as well. They don't do those so much anymore. But were you?
I was bitten by the Broadway bug because I had parents who loved Broadway musicals, and whenever they were able to afford a night out, they would take me to see the latest Broadway show. We lived in New York City, and so the first thing I ever saw was Annie Get Your Gun with Ethel Merman, and I came home that night and I announced to my parents, I was just a kid, but I announced to my parents that that's what I wanted to do, that I wanted to write songs like that, and I wanted to entertain people. And it's always been a goal. My father thought I was crazy. My mother thought it was wonderful. I think I almost caused a divorce in the family. but as good luck would have it, I found myself on Broadway and just a few years after my college graduation. And I was very young and very inexperienced, but I was nominated for a Tony Award for Milk and Honey, and there was no stopping me after that.
Now, I'm just curious because, you know, there's a lot of youthful exuberance and bravado when you start something and you think you can do no wrong, no matter what job you're in. When you did that first Broadway play, did you think that, you know, this is a piece of cake, this is easy, I'm just rolling along singing a song as the song goes, or if you knew then what you knew now, would you realize how hard it was?
I had no idea how hard it was. To me, it was the culmination of a dream. I didn't think I would ever have a chance to write more than one Broadway show because thinking any beyond that was over my head at that point. And here I was with a Broadway show. A producer trusted me because I really was an inexperienced kid. And it was a big hit, and I got this nomination for a Tony. And it all just hit me at once that, A, it was very, very hard work. B, it was very stressful waiting for those reviews and collaborating with a whole rash of directors and actors and choreographers and orchestrators. And I learned while doing, instead of learning at first and then setting out. But it was a very good way to learn, and I learned what mistakes I made. And one night, a man came to see Milk and Honey, whose name was David Merrick. And he was the famous producer of so many Broadway hits. And he asked if I would come and have a meeting with him in his office. And he offered me my next musical, which turned out to be Hello, Dolly. So it was very, very heady, you know, for a kid to have all this happening at the same time. But I just thought, you know, don't spoil this rhythm that's going on here. Don't ask any questions. Just do the work and see what happens. And the rest, I guess, is history now.
We're talking with Jerry Herman, the Broadway lyricist here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800. Let's go back a little bit. You mentioned that you first saw Annie Get Your Gun with your mother when you were a young boy. Between the time that you made that very youthful decision that you wanted to do this type of thing for a living and the time that you actually got to Broadway, who were your idols? Whose music, whose work did you like and wanted to emulate as a lyricist?
It's always been Irving Berlin, because I loved the simplicity of his music and the simplicity of his lyrics, and yet the elegance and the long-lasting quality that they've had. I mean, we still sing God Bless America. We still sing There's No Business Like Show Business, and I admired his skill. It sounds like it's easy to write a simple song, but it truly isn't. It's difficult to do it in the space of a few notes and a few words. And I always wanted to be like Mr. Berlin. And if there is a figurehead hanging over me, it's always been that man. Obviously, I admire all of the great songwriters that came before before my time, like Gershwin and Cole Porter and just on and certainly Rodgers and Hammerstein. But I wanted to be more like Irving Berlin because of the ability that he gave me that night when I saw Annie Get Your Gun to remember three or four songs and to be able to go to the piano and play a couple of songs that I had never heard before. And I thought, what a great gift this gentleman has given me without knowing it. And that's what I really want to do.
Irving Berlin lived to be over 100, so I'm assuming that at some point you had a chance to meet him. Did you ever have a chance to work with him? Because he worked.
No. He wrote music and lyrics, and I write music and lyrics. So, you know, there was no way for us to ever collaborate. And I just met him once when he came backstage to see Hello, Dolly, and it was really like a full circle, because this was the great man that I admired coming to my show now and saying wonderful things about it to me. So it was one of the most memorable nights of my life.
We're talking with Jerry Herman here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800-790-0991, the number to call you. You mentioned that listening to Irving Berlin's music as a child, you could go home and play it on the piano two or three songs. Were you musically inclined from a very young age?
Yes, I started playing the piano at six, and I played by ear, and I could play anything that I heard. I'd go to the movies and come home and play the background music for my my parents, and my mother knew that there was something going on with me that should be developed, and she talked my father into just letting me develop as a composer, and I started writing songs and trying to emulate the Irving Berlin style or the Broadway style that I had seen. And those songs turned into a couple of off-Broadway revues that I had running in the late 50s in New York City. And because of one of those revues, I got the assignment to write Milk and Honey.
Now, did you come from a musical family?
Yes, very much so. My mother was a singer and pianist, and had her own radio show called Ruth Sachs Sings, and she was very proud of that. She always showed me those clips in the paper about her show. And after I was born, she gave up any desire to continue with her entertaining. She loved being a mother and a housewife and helping my father with his business, which was a children's camp. They owned a children's camp in the Berkshires in upper New York State.
We're talking with Jerry Herman, the Broadway lyricist and composer here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. If you have any questions, 7900991, Star Talk, and 1-800-491-CJAD. Those are the numbers to call. We'll continue on the other side of the news. This is Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800.
Now more of CJAD's Holder Overnight on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak with Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, a free call on Bell Mobility, and 800-491-CJAD.
And we're speaking with Broadway lyricist and composer Jerry Herman here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800-790-0991 is the number to call. And Jerry, your first big success, as you mentioned, was Milk and Honey. But you alluded to an even bigger success, I guess, the one you had in 1964, and that was Hello, Dolly, correct?
Correct. That was just a phenomenon, and still is. There is never a night somewhere in the world there's not a production of Hello, Dolly. It ran on Broadway for 7 full years, and for a long time was the longest-running musical of all time. It was eclipsed by Cats, A Chorus Line. But in our seventh year, we were the longest running musical of all time. So it really was a very exciting thing for a young a songwriter to stand in the back of the theater and hear the people screaming and laughing and applauding. And it's given me a very good life.
Now, how does it work, especially in a show such as that, a very, very big show? Do you come in and write the lyrics for a show knowing what the book is about and probably who's cast in it, or do the songs come before the cast is chosen?
The songs come before the cast is chosen. In fact, I was told that Ethel Merman might be the star of Hello, Dolly, and so I wrote a score that had a lot of what I call Merman notes in it, you know, those powerhouse notes that she was famous for. And when the time came to ask Miss Merman to come and listen to a new score, she announced that she was retiring and that she had spent her life in dressing rooms and I had this score written for Ethel, and I was devastated, obviously, and Vista Merrick and Gower Champion, our director and choreographer, came up with the quite wonderful idea of using Carol Channing, who of course is Dolly Levi now, and it's inconceivable to think about anybody else once you've seen her do the role. So I had to change a lot of the melodies to accommodate Carol's voice, which was totally different, of course, and much lower. But I did, and I made Carol comfortable. Boy, did we have an opening night! It got the most ecstatic notices I've ever remembered a show getting. Mr. Merrick said to me that night, "Jerry, we're going to be here for 7 years," and he was right.
So you do get to work closely with the artist, as you say. You alter the songs and change them to fit.
Carol. I work intimately with every person who's ever done a show of mine, and we had seven Dollies on Broadway. And I worked with each one of them and made each one of them feel comfortable in the role and changed keys for them and did whatever was necessary to make them sound good. Because if they sounded good, I knew that I would sound good.
That sounds very giving. I would assume in a lot of cases that some lyricists might be very protective of their product. It's, here, I wrote this. You come up to my bar, so to speak.
Well, that's very true, and some people are, but I learned at this very, tender age that if the star sounds comfortable and happy in the role, and if she's not straining and she's not trying to sing notes that she doesn't have, the audience becomes comfortable. And she becomes more comfortable in the role, and the person who ends up really looking good is the composer and the lyricist. And in my case, that's me, because I do both.
Now, I know this is a hypothetical question, but how do you think the show would have fared if Ethel Merman had done the role?
Well, the interesting phenomenon that happened was that when we had reached the end of our sixth year, Ethel Merman called us and asked if she could now come back to Broadway and do a year with us. And so I ended up having the original star that I wrote the score for, and she was just, I mean, I worshipped Ethel Merman, so she was quite marvelous. And I put back a couple of songs that I had to cut for Carol Channing, and so I had, as they say, my cake and eat it too. It was a great way to close the show finally after the seventh year, because the last night was Ethel Merman's at the St. James Theater in New York. So, you know the list of ladies that have done Hello, Dolly? Do you have time?
Sure, go ahead. Tell us a few, please.
Well, it opened with Carol Channing. Then we had Ginger Rogers, Betty Grable, Pearl Bailey, Martha Ray, Phyllis Diller, and we closed with Ethel Merman. But while this was going on, Eve Arden was doing it in Chicago. Mary Martin was doing it in Vietnam. And the list just goes on. And then, of course, Barbara Streisand did the film version. So it gave me the chance to work with about 20 wonderful, wonderful ladies and get to know them personally and become friends of mine.
Did you work on the film version of that as well?
Yes, yes.
Because I understand that Barbara Streisand and Walter Matthau did not get along.
No, they didn't. They didn't, but I don't think it showed on screen. I really don't. I think that their performances were terrific, and I think that was all backstage stuff.
7900991 is the number to call. We are talking with Broadway composer and lyricist Jerry Herman. Howard, hi, you're on CJD.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine.
Mr. Herman, it's an honor to speak to you.
Thank you so much.
One of my favorite CDs is a collaboration you did with Michael Feinstein.
Oh, can I be honest with you? That's my favorite album.
Oh, wow.
Of all the things that I've done, because it's me playing and Michael Feinstein singing.
Right.
And our collaboration was one of those magical times when we found ourselves breathing together. That either happens or it doesn't. You can't really rehearse that, you know. It was just that we had the same take on all the songs, and I love the result. I think that album really shows my body of work off better than even better than the show albums.
Well, you know, it's something that we continue to play, and the kids, as they're getting older, they love listening to it, and it's amazing. You know, I didn't realize that all that work was all your work, but it is, right?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and it's some of the songs, I think one of them, I read in the liner notes, were songs that were originally going to be put in, like Hello Dolly, like Penny in Your Pocket, I think.
Yeah,
it is.
Penny in My Pocket was part of the original score,
mm-hmm.
and was cut when we were out of town because it was the show was a little too long.
And it's a wonderful song.
Yeah, it's a fun song.
It's a fun song.
Yeah.
And the last thing is, you sing on that album, right?
Yeah.
And I get the feeling that's something that it sounds like you would have enjoyed to be able to do.
Oh, well, I mean, to sing with Michael Feinstein and to be on an album, I just had the time of my life.
Well,
it really was a great experience.
Well, thanks very much.
Thank you for knowing that album.
Oh, thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call.
Bye.
Bye-bye. 7900991 star talk, 1-800-491-CJD. We're talking with Jerry Herman, the Broadway lyricist and composer here on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJD 800.
Now more of CJAD's Halder Overnight on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. To speak with Peter, call 790-0991, Star Talk, a free call on Bell Mobility, and 800-491-CJAD.
Peter Anthony Holder here with you on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800. We're talking with Jerry Herman, who is the Broadway lyricist and composer. 7900-991 is the number to call. Celeste in Westmount, hi, you're on CJAD.
Hi.
Hi.
Mr. Herman?
Hi.
Hi. You know, you've written so many wonderful things. La Cage aux Folles was in Montreal for only 5 days, but I went to see it twice. It just blew me away.
Oh, that's lovely to hear. I'm very, very proud of La Cage aux Folles. It was wonderful, wonderful to work on, and I was so pleased with its international success. It's playing in about 7 different countries right now at the same time, and I'm so glad you got to see it.
Oh, I just loved it. I wish that we'd hear the music more often, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
I would like to do a revival of it. In fact, we're Harvey Fierstein, the author, and I are talking about doing a revival of it.
Oh, good.
Yeah, so good. Perhaps it'll get to Montreal again. I would
good.
Love that.
Thanks for the call, Celeste.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.
7900991 is the number to call. You mentioned earlier that sometimes you work on a show, and when you go take it on the road, you find out it's too long, and you have to cut a song. Is that like, are all the songs like your children, and it's sad to cast one off?
Yes, they're very much like children. That's a wonderful analogy, because they become, you know, a part of you, and you don't really want to lose one. But I learned very early on that it's the show that matters and not an individual song. And for example, when MAME opened, which was the show that followed Hello Dolly, and Angela Lansbury, our star, had a very pretty ballad at the end of Act One called Love Is Only Love. And the show was such a smash when we opened in Philadelphia that our director came to us and said, everything is great except that we're a good 10 minutes too long and we have to cut something. And I volunteered that we cut that song because I thought it was kind of holding up the flow of Act One, and we tried a performance without that song, and we went right to the MAME number, which was our big production number at the end of Act One, and the reaction was just sensational, and I knew that I was doing the right thing. So I learned that you can hold on to something if it's causing a problem or if it's in the way, and I'm good about that now. And when I was a kid, I would fight for every bar and every lyric, but I learned that it's the total show that really matters.
Do you find that you kind of sneak those songs that you have to take out of a play into a subsequent play?
Exactly. Now, that's a perfect lead-in to what I did with Love Is Only Love. I gave it to Barbara Streisand as a new song for the Hello Dolly film, and she sang that in the movie of Dolly, but it was actually written for Angela Lansbury in MAME. And I never throw anything away. If
okay, well, then I have a double question for you.
Yeah.
In your entire repertoire of songs that people do know that you have done, what is your favorite?
Oh, you can't. You know, when you said they're like children, you wouldn't tell me that you liked your daughter better than your son. So I can't tell you that I like If He Walked Into My Life from MAME, which is a favorite of mine, better than I Am What I Am from La Cage, which is one of the songs I'm most proud of. And, of course, Hello Dolly and MAME and We Need a Little Christmas, which has become a Christmas perennial. They're all, you know, just part of who I am and what I do, and I like them all for different reasons.
But those are all the songs that are out there, and the second part of my question was going to be, what's your favorite song that we don't know about, the one that you couldn't find room for in a Broadway show?
I wrote a song for a show of mine called Mac and Mabel, about Max Sennett and Mabel Normand and the early silent screen comedy. I wrote a song for Bernadette Peters, who starred in that. And that was cut on the road. And I've never reused that. So it's still in my trunk, and it's still a new piece of material. And who knows, you may be hearing it next year in some new show of mine.
Well, speaking of Bernadette Peters, I understand there's a one-night-only event that's taking place that Bernadette Peters and a lot of other people you've worked with are going to be taking part of. It's called, I believe, Tap Your Troubles Away?
That's right. Tap Your Troubles Away, which is one of the songs from Mac and Mabel, is the title. And for the first time, Angela Lansbury and Carol Channing, my original Dolly and original MAME, are going to be on the stage together at the same time. And the audience is going to go wild when they see the two ladies together. And Bernadette Peters, my original Mabel, is going to be there. And Tyne Daly is going to sing a song. And Leslie Uggams, one of my favorite singers, who did Jerry's Girls on Broadway, is going to be there, and it's going to be quite a night. And it's being done by the Actors Fund, an organization I'm very, very close to because they do such wonderful work. and they're honoring me that night. It's November 10th, and it's going to happen in Los Angeles, and we're working on it. In fact, I'm having a meeting tomorrow morning about it.
Janet, tell us a little bit about the Actors Fund.
Well, the Actors Fund really takes care of people in the business, of actors and actresses who might need places to live when they're older, or might need help at any time. They run homes for actors around the country. They help young actors to find work and to be able to support themselves so that they don't have to go into other businesses. It's just a wonderful, multifaceted organization that does so much for the actor in the United States.
And what about the future for you? Do you have anything you're working on that you're
heading toward
Broadway?
I'm working on a new score called Miss Spectacular, another larger-than-life lady, because I like writing for female leads, and that's where the title for the review, Jerry's Girls, which is played all over. I believe it's played in Canada as well as all over the United States and Australia, and it came from the fact that I've written for so many female characters like Mame and Dolly and Mabel I really prefer writing for the female voice and for a glamorous character than writing for a man, but I have obviously written a lot of male shows also.
The one thing that people like yourself do is they put a smile on people's faces if they see your shows, be they on Broadway, in road companies, or when they make their way to the screen, or if they just simply buy the albums. And a smile is something that we could all use right about now, especially what's happened in New York.
Oh yes, and I'm really, more than ever, trying to entertain people at this time, because you're so right. We need entertainment more than we ever have before to try and get over the sadness that we're all feeling here. I'm glad that I'm going to have this evening very soon, because "Tap Your Troubles Away" is a good title for the evening, and I wish you could be there.
Yeah. And since we're getting close to the end of the year too, one of your other songs that you just mentioned a few minutes ago has a line in it: "We need a little Christmas right this very minute."
Yes, and. That's going to be done a lot this year, because Radio City Music Hall is calling their Christmas show "We Need a Little Christmas" and opening with my song this year, and that's exactly what we do need right now in October.
Jerry, it's been an absolute pleasure to have the opportunity to talk to you and share some of your illustrious career with our audience, and also mention the fact that you have this event coming up, and which is unfortunately only in California, but it's an honor nonetheless, and I'm sure one that you're very, very proud of, and not only very, very proud of, but one that I'm sure the people who are involved in giving this honor to you are very proud to be part of it as well, because you've had a hand in their careers by writing the songs that you've written.
Well, we're going to have quite an evening on November 10th, and I thank you for giving me the chance to talk to some of your audience and to have this nice conversation with you.
Pleasure talking to you, sir. Take care.
Bye-bye.